Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents A Novel Way to Die by Stephanie Holmes, narrated by Gabrielle Baker. Epigraph. They are given to all kinds of marvellous beliefs, are subject to trances and visions, and frequently see strange sights and hear music and voices in the air. The whole neighbourhood abounds with local tales, haunted spots, and twilight superstitions. Washington Irving, The Legend of Sleepy Hollow. I have crossed oceans of time to find you. Bram Stoker, Dracula. Argleton Gazette. Third grisly murder by the suspected Dracula killer. Halloween may be just around the corner, but Argleton residents are advised to lock their doors and avoid trick-or-treating after the body of Debbie Malcolm was found on the grounds of Argleton Presbyterian Church, her body drained of blood. The serial killer terrorizing the village has been dubbed the Dracula killer, as his attacks mimic vampiric killings from mythology and literature. Many speculate his nocturnal activities may be linked to a series of grave robberies at the Argleton Presbyterian Cemetery. Police report that they don't believe the crimes are related. Sylvia Bloom and Helen Wilde, who manage the local crystal and tarot reading store, which mysteriously exploded earlier this year, believe the killer may in fact be a real vampire. He's been lured to our world for All Hallows' Eve celebrations, when the veil between heaven and hell and the living world is thinnest, explains Ms. Wilde. I've made a new healing tea that will help you to ward off psychic attacks. Only £12 for a box. Can I interest you in one? Mabel Ellis, head of Argleton Spirit Seekers Society, agrees that the killings have a supernatural origin. At my age, I've seen lots of murders in the village, but never anything like this. The ritual nature of them, the fact one victim was found in the graveyard, the time of year, it all points toward a killer not of this world. It's all very exciting, but don't let it stop you enjoying the first annual Argleton Halloween Festival. We promise no murders, only spooky good fun. The Spirit Seekers Society is sponsoring our Halloween Festival, and for the month of October, they're offering discounted paranormal investigations for any Argleton resident who finds themselves unsettled by strange occurrences in their home or business. This reporter remains sceptical, but arcane superstition aside, it's clear the Dracula killer continues to hunt in Argleton. Who will be his next victim? Will the spirit seekers exorcise the demon in our midst? Will our local constabulary or amateur bookstore sleuths save the day? Chapter 1. Oh, great. Murray rolled his eyes at the architectural monstrosity towering over us. Another human fishbowl? Why can't our favourite bloodsucker's assistant buy blocks of pokey terraced houses where no one will notice us breaking and entering? It does look like Grand Designs had a baby with Alcatraz, I ventured. In the gloom, all I could discern were vague shapes, which made the house seem even more sinister. Who wanted to live in a place like this, all sharp corners and jutting steel? Give me a homely fire in a pokey upstairs flat with a cat on my lap, a book in my hand, and ghosts in the walls, and I was perfectly happy. Especially if the chair opposite me contained the brooding figure of Heathcliff Earnshaw, and a lanky Moriarty bent down to hand me a plate of roast beef with lust in his eyes, while the kind, fire-rimmed eyes of Quoth the Raven burned into me from the shadows. That was exactly where I wanted to be right now. back at Nevermore Bookshop, tucked up in front of the fire with a mug of Quoth's amazing hot chocolate warming my fingers. Not freezing my arse off in the crisp October air, about to commit yet another crime, all in the name of freeing the world from a bloodthirsty vampire. How is this my life? It had been nearly a year since I came back to Argleton from New York City to lick my wounds and figure out the person I'd be after I lost my eyesight. I never expected that person to be the vampire-hunting, murder-mystery-solving, book-slinging daughter of Homer, with three gorgeous boyfriends and a cat for a grandmother. Nevermore Bookshop had the last laugh on that one. Over the last few months, I'd added cat burglar to the list as Maury and I sought out the boxes of Romanian dirt Dracula hid to ensure his immortality. If he was killed and his servant buried him in dirt from his homeland, he would regenerate. We couldn't go after him until we'd made sure every last one of those dirt boxes was destroyed. I drummed my fingers nervously on the skin-tight black catsuit I wore. At least cat-burgling outfits were fierce. We rounded the edge of the building. All was in darkness, save for the bright moon that hung over us, reflecting dappled light from the steel front door. To be fair, most things were in darkness for me these days. In the months since I'd cleared Maury of murder charges, my eyesight deteriorated to the point where my night vision was now only shapes and shadows. I was basically the worst cat burglar in the world. Luckily, I had the Napoleon of crime at my side. Maury pulled out his lock-picking kit and got to work on the door, while I stared over my shoulder at the bright moon, letting my eyes adjust to make out the rough shapes of the minimalist front garden, the street beyond, and the woods of King's Copse edging the property. My guide dog Oscar sat at my heels, his ears pricked for movement. He'd gotten awfully good at navigating in the dead of night, thanks to our recent nocturnal adventures. Poor Oscar. I'm sorry I made you into a criminal. I should probably start calling myself a dog burglar. We're in, gorgeous. Maury's rich voice broke the silence. I heard the door click open. Maury went inside first, using an app on his phone to disable the alarm. I waved Oscar in after him, hoping he didn't have mud on his paws that would leave prints behind. Not that it mattered. The man who owned this house, Grey Lachlan, rarely spent any time at his properties. He was too busy renovating the flat across the street from the bookshop and making our lives miserable. What's the layout of... Ow! Something hard and metal slammed into my forehead, sending me sprawling backwards. My tailbone cracked against the hard tiles. Oscar barked with distress. He was supposed to lead me around obstacles, but he was a dog, and he was not perfect, and he probably got lost in the dark, which was something I could relate to. Shh, boy, I wrapped my arms around Oscar, nuzzling his neck until he licked my face. Maury helped me to my feet. He flicked on the light, revealing the shape of a random steel sculpture with eight spindly arms like spider's legs that attached to the wall with bungee cords. Who puts a medieval torture device in their bloody entrance hall? I growled, giving the thing a kick with my cherry red dock. The steel arms wobbled, and Oscar shied away. Someone who wants to impale a blind burglar. Maury rubbed his chin. Come on, gorgeous. The sooner we find the dirt, the sooner we can get out of here before you accidentally put your head through a constable. Oh, don't remind me. Three houses ago, I tripped over the edge of a rug, only instead of landing on said rug, which was quite soft and snuggly, I slammed into the wall and knocked a priceless artwork onto my head. Now we turn the lights on and Maury inspects carefully for trip hazards. Once Maury declared the property Mina-proof, we spread out. Maury took the living room while I hunted through the kitchen cupboards, feeling over the empty shelves and pushing my fingers into the show home designer teacups. I pulled the back off the coffee machine, but it wasn't filled with dirt. In the book, Dracula had large wooden crates filled with Transylvanian earth, but all the stashes we'd found had been relatively small. He must only need a little for his regeneration. "Aha!" Maury yelled. I spun around. Maury barreled into the kitchen. I could just make out a rectangular object in his hands and the long cord dragging across the carpet behind him. "What's that?" "I have no idea. It was plugged into the telly. It might be some kind of DVD player, but look at the size of this hole." Maury poked his fingers into a wide slot. When he removed them and held them up to my nose, I saw they were covered in dirt. Transylvanian dirt. "I think that's a VCR. I fumbled in my bag for my vial of holy water. We were running low, which meant we'd need to add stealing from a Catholic church, again, to our long list of indiscretions. Mum used to have one when I was little. You watch videos, which are on spools of magnetic tape. You have to hold down a button to fast forward or rewind. You couldn't skip around scenes. But you could use them to record programmes off the telly, so you didn't miss anything." Maury looked confused.
"You mean you couldn't just select a show and push play?"
"Nope. The newspaper published a list of what programmes were and their times, and you had to show up at that time or miss out. Unless you had a VCR, of course."
"How quaint."
Maury looked at the machine with such unrivalled disgust, I fell in love with him a tiny bit more. James Moriarty needed the best of everything in life, and that included the latest technology. And he needs me. The thought sent a thrill racing through my veins. There was a reason I came with Maury on these burglaries. He could probably do them on his own. And sometimes, like the time with the constable, I was more of a liability. But the way he smiled at me when I pulled on my cat suit and snuck through the countryside with him did delicious things to my insides. Maury tended to view most interactions with humans as exercises in lower brain functions, but he was never afraid to be completely himself around me, even when his true self was manipulating and innocent with his charms or gleefully committing property damage. If I had to be truly honest, I got a thrill out of every moment we spent together, walking a tightrope edge of being caught. My master criminal had rubbed off on me more than I'd like to admit. Maury held the flap of the VCR open while I sprinkled the dirt inside with holy water. For good measure, I tossed in a broken piece of communion wafer. If my life was a movie, something magical would happen to indicate the dirt was no longer usable by Dracula. But this wasn't a movie, so nothing sparkled, and there were no shimmering sound effects. We just had to hope like hell we'd done the job. Far too much of our plan revolved around hope like hell for my liking. Maury tossed the VCR down on the table.
"While we're here, I want to have a peek around this place. I wonder if it's as ghastly as the last flat, with the gold bathtub. I've been thinking about getting a place of my own, and I wouldn't mind something modern and elegant like this. My temporary bedroom doesn't have room for my toys." I could see Maury living here. Creepy modern sculptures and all. It definitely suited him more than our current arrangement. Maury gave up his bedroom in the flat so I could have a space of my own. He'd been sleeping in the first floor storage room, but that was only big enough for his bed. All his toys, his various BDSM accoutrements and computer equipment were still in my room, taking up valuable space I needed for my record player and shoe collection. The truth was, we were all falling over one another in the cramped flat. But with Maury having to refund several clients after winding down his death-faking business, we didn't have the funds for more renovations. A noise caught the edge of my conscience. A rustle in the trees outside. My heart thudded against my chest. Maybe we should leave.
Nonsense. We can't leave until I've measured the bedroom for my stockade and that puppy has taken a shit in the toaster. A little gift from us to Grey for keeping us up all night with his hammering. Oh, and I might grab a bottle of wine. Grey always has exceptional taste.
Maury moved to the kitchen, his long fingers dancing over the bottles in the rack. This was the problem with breaking and entering with a man who wasn't afraid of the law. Maury always wanted to hang about and make mischief. I was keen to get home to my hot chocolate and my quaff. Another noise sent my heart hammering. Are you positive no one lives in this block of flats? I swear I heard... I jumped as a long, low howl echoed outside, followed by the sounds of snarling, snapping teeth. Oscar pawed at the rug and whimpered.
They've unleashed the hounds,
Maury whispered.
You didn't tell me there were hounds?
You never asked.
Maury dared one of his sheepish grins.
We have to go.
I pictured the three of us cowering here with vicious dogs barking outside when Hayes and Wilson showed up. I wouldn't be able to do much about Dracula from a jail cell.
An excellent deduction.
Maury tucked the pilfered bottle of Chateau Lafitte under his arm. I tucked my hand into the crook of his arm and he led me around the sculpture. We stepped outside. The snarling drew closer. The bushes rustling as vicious beasts closed the distance to the house. Maury slammed the door and tugged me forward as I yelled at Oscar to run. My brave doggo barked at the beasts as Maury led us into the woods at a sprint. I screwed my eyes shut with terror. Tree branches scraped my arms. I tripped and skidded over gnarled branches and loose stones. I focused on holding Oscar's harness as tight as I dared. Maury and Oscar would never steer me wrong. I trusted them with my life. The snarling grew closer. Fear squeezed my heart as the dogs rounded us, closing in. Hot breath tickled the backs of my legs. I screamed and kicked forward, lunging after Maury into the darkness. Behind the dogs came another sound, a rhythmic clatter, as if of horses' hooves, carrying with it an oppressive terror that settled low in my chest. My limbs ached, my lungs screamed for air. It wouldn't be long before I couldn't run any longer. The sound drew closer and closer and... thud! A dull tremble, horribly close, shuddered through my body. Then a whimper and a receding rustle. Paws crunched in the falling leaves, stampeding away from us. What in Isis' name happened? I opened my eyes. The action was pointless. In the dark, away from the streetlights, I had no hope of seeing more than rough shapes. But I could hear the dogs whimpering, whining, slinking away. Oscar burrowed his head into my shoulder, his whole body trembling. What's going on?
Look, Mina.
Murray turned my head and pointed. I think that's who scared the dogs away. The moon shone through a gap in the trees, casting enough light that I could make out the silhouette of a man sitting on top of a monstrous black horse. Steam pulled from the animal's nostrils as it snorted, stomping an enormous black hoof against the ground. I'd never seen a horse like that before, so huge and mean with its yellow glowing eyes. But that wasn't what stilled my heart and dried the saliva on my tongue. "Is it just me?" I managed to choke out. "Or does that rider have no head?" Chapter 2. Maury seemed completely nonplussed, but his fingers tightened around mine, and I knew he was frightened too. "Yup, he looks pretty headless to me." The rider inclined his torso stump toward me, then directed the horse to trot away into the trees. I buried my face in Oscar's fur as a groan welled up inside me. The headless horseman. From Washington Irving's The Legend of Sleepy Hollow. This isn't good. How'd he get all the way out here? I was too annoyed to be scared anymore. A cranially challenged rider jaunting around Argleton could only come from one place, which made him the third new literature character who'd appeared in Nevermore Bookshop this week. We now had Socrates sleeping on a roll-out bed in the philosophy room, and Dr. Victor Frankenstein had taken over the cellar for his laboratory. Nevermore felt less like a bookshop and more like a halfway house for the literarily depraved. I set Oscar down and gave him the signal to lead me through the trees after the horse. "What are you doing?" Murray jogged after me. "We can't just leave him wandering all over Argleton. Someone might see him."
"So?"
"So, we have enough problems to deal with right now without the villagers discovering their favourite local bookshop brings literary characters to life."
"Relax, gorgeous. They'll think he's part of the Halloween madness."
Murray did have a point. It was October, and in a country that didn't officially celebrate the holiday, Argleton Village had gone a little Halloween mad. My old neighbour, Mrs. Ellis, decided the village needed something fun to take our minds off the serial killer in our midst, so she organised a week-long Halloween festival. Seeing all the decorations in the shop windows and pumpkins lining the garden paths made me nostalgic about my 4 years in New York City. Every year, Ashley and I would spend months designing each other's costumes as a kind of creative challenge. We'd reveal our creations to wear to Marcus Ribble's epic Halloween party. America was one crazy-ass country, but they did Halloween upright. Argleton couldn't quite match Marcus's gritty elegance, but they were more than making up for that with reckless enthusiasm. The festival didn't officially begin for another few days, but so many people were wandering around in costume, I doubt our decapitated jockey would stir much fuss. But still.
"I'm going after him. Are you coming or not?"
I didn't wait for Maury's reply. Oscar had picked up the horse's scent. He trotted along at a decent clip, steering me around the trees and bushes in my way. He stopped at a low, dry stone wall so I could clamber over, then took off again, his nose close to the ground. Oscar and I had become quite a team in the few months we'd been together. He knew every corner of Nevermore Bookshop intimately, so much so that sometimes I attached a kiddie trailer filled with books to his harness and got him to wheel it to the appropriate shelf. I'd even caught him snuggled up in front of the fire with Heathcliff after a busy day. He'd become an intrinsic part of our strange little family. And I was turning him into a criminal. If I didn't have Oscar with me on these dangerous midnight missions, I'd be going in completely blind, pun intended. And I wasn't going to sit around at home and wait for Morrie and Heathcliff and Quoth to take out Dracula for me. I was Mina Wilde, daughter of Homer. Somehow I was responsible for what came out of Nevermore Bookshop. I wouldn't shirk that responsibility, which was why I crashed and stumbled my way through the woods after the headless horseman. We emerged into a clearing. Moonlight gleamed off a large circular pool. We'd reached the duck pond at the edge of the council estate where I used to live with my mum. I came here as a kid sometimes, to read under the gazebo and escape having to be slave labour for Helen Wilde's latest get-rich-quick scheme. The horse and rider circled the duck pond. The rider's cloak billowed in the stiff breeze. The horse bent its neck to the water. At that moment, my mind imagined all kinds of sinister and ghostly tricks. The water boiling, the ducks' heads flying off, a demonic face rising from the depths. Oh, he's having a drink. I breathed in relief as loud slurps echoed through the trees. I guess even spectral horses of pure evil need to hydrate. Morrie appeared beside me. Maybe he... Mina, what are you doing? I squared my shoulders and stepped out of the trees, gripping Oscar's harness tight between my fingers. I cleared my throat. The horse continued to drink, but the rider turned his body toward me. Even though I couldn't see much more than his silhouette, any movement of a silhouette without a head was freaky as fuck. Terror bit at my throat. My heart battered against my ribs. Even though I knew horse and rider were characters in a book, I also knew they had the same motivations and desires as they did inside the pages. Encountering this beastly duo hadn't ended so well for Ichabod Crane. "Hi," I waved. "I'm Mina. I wanted to say thanks for saving us." The rider kind of bobbed in his saddle. I guess that was headless horseman talk for, "You're welcome." I continued. "So, I don't know if you noticed, but you're not in Sleepy Hollow anymore. It's kind of a long story, but you probably don't want to be wandering aimlessly around all night long. If you follow us, I'll take you somewhere safe and maybe get some stabling for your horse." I turned to leave, gesturing for Oscar and Morrie to head toward the road. Horse and rider continued to stand there. I felt the itch of eyeless eyes watching me. "I said, you can follow us." I stepped behind the horse to try and encourage it to move. I waved my arms, but the horse remained rooted in place, so I stepped closer. How do you get a spectral horse to move? I can't exactly feed it an apple.
Mina?
Morrie looked like he was trying very hard not to laugh. I opened my mouth to ask him what was so funny, when a stream of foul-smelling water drenched the front of my clothes.
Ah!
I leaped back. Oscar barked with excitement. He thought it was great fun. The horse wasn't moving because he was taking a piss. All over my brand new catsuit.
Yuck!
I limped over to Morrie.
You might have warned me.
And missed the delightful expression on your face? Never.
Morrie's fingers stroked my chin, tilting my head up. He leaned in close, giving me a moonlit view of the aristocratic planes of his face and those cheekbones.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?